Welcome to the Crude Life Podcast, because sometimes when you're making money, life can just be crude. Hey folks, hello again, how you doing? My name is Jason Spies. I'm an award-winning multimedia journalist and talk show host, and on today's episode, we interview Charles Olson, completion specialist with Whiting Petroleum. Excellent interview with Mr. Olson. We talk about refracs. Personally, I think 2017 is the year of the refracs, and I bring that into the interview with Charles Olson. We talk about the cost, trends, geography, how technology is really driving these refracs. Right now, the Bakken's at about, let's say, 8%, something like that. Well, as technology increases, we're looking at more and more refracs as another arrow to put in the quiver of oil and gas opportunities, which is a good news for the Bakken and those five generations of play. We talk with Charles Olson with Whiting Petroleum about all that, and also how big data is incorporated into all this, and the differences between the traditional frac and the refrac. This is a great refracking for dummies, as well as an advanced course, all wrapped up into one interview. You're not going to want to miss this interview. Charles Olson, completion specialist, Whiting Petroleum. But first, I want to take just a quick moment before we get to our exclusive interview and remind you folks to please support our sponsors. They literally keep our lights on, and they also keep interviews like this free. Over the past few months, I've told you about how unbelievable Hatch coaching is. Well, don't just take my word for it. Listen to what Greg Tavine of Emerging Prairies has to say about Hatch coaching.
Yeah, I mean, this guy gets people laughing. He gets people thinking. He's somebody that challenges and inspires. And what I think is so beautiful about Eric is he's real. I think the number one thing that I look for in speakers when we bring them into our platforms is that they're that person 365 days a year. Eric is not just a speaker on a stage. That's who he is at the grocery store. That's who he is when he's at the mall. But Eric is somebody that lives his values each and every day. And I think we can all respect that.
To find out more about Hatch Coaching or to have Eric Hatch speak at your event or company, visit hatchcoaching.com. That's hatchcoaching.com. Or call 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572.
My name is Charles Olson. I'm with Whiting Petroleum. I'm the completions manager for the Northern Rockies asset, which covers the Williston Basin.
And we're here today talking about refracs, kind of stemming off of the Western Dakota Energy Association annual meeting, and honestly, the Petroleum Council's annual meeting, and a lot of annual meetings in the Bakken are talking about the refrac procedure. In fact, I'd almost want to call 2017 the year of the refrac, it seems, because it seems to have been the driving force behind the Bakken. Talk to me about your guys' role at the refracs and your presentation, if you would, please, at the annual meetings.
Sure. So, first and foremost, we did participate in the 2016 North Dakota Petroleum Conference annual meeting in Minot, and we gave our initial talk on refracs up there, and then most recently we gave a presentation for the Western Dakota Energy Association here just last week, and that was also on refracs. It was a little more abbreviated as we were participating with a couple other folks, Marathon and a representative from the EERC on refracs and enhanced oil recovery in general.
And how would you call that panel? Because, you know, a few years ago, we weren't hearing much about the refracs. And then you're right, around last year, the annual meeting, we kind of heard a little bit about it. And then this year, as much as a panel, where you've got the ERC, Marathon, yourself, and Justin Kringsted moderating the panel. So just kind of, what was your impression, whether from Whiting's perspective or looking at the overall industry over the past year, just kind of the trend when it comes to refracs?
Sure. There's been an uptick in the interest in refracs in the Williston Basin, other basins as well, but the Williston Basin in particular, there have been several companies, Whiting, although we've not done a bunch of them yet, we've taken a fairly measured approach on our candidate selection, and we're cautiously dipping our toe into the water. We think there's a bright future with refracs, but we understand that we need to proceed cautiously as we go back to these others. Marathon in particular has had some, several very successful refracs and reworkings of older wells. And the primary driver behind this has been, in the last 11 years or so, just the technology revolution when it comes to drilling and completing horizontal wells, not only in the Bakken, but other areas. And, we recognize that those early efforts lack because those technologies simply weren't available at the time. So although those wells, if left alone, might recover less, we see them as an opportunity now to apply refracs and get more out of those wells, with what we know now.
For me, one of the exciting things of this story of the refracs is you're starting to see how a few years ago, in fact, the second story that we did back in 2012 was that the Bakken isn't an oil boom, it's a technology boom. And there was several reasons for that, the integration of big data, the fracking, just the fracking technology itself. But a lot of it stemmed on the fact that a lot of the experts were talking about how currently the Bakken back then was at about 7% of known technology in order to frack these wells. And then, now I'm hearing we're anywhere around 8 to 10%. So to me, what I'm seeing is that refrac technology happened to where they're discovering a little bit more, whether it's through the ERC or whether it's through the private sector, through Whiting, or you mentioned Marathon was having some good results when it comes to the refrac. Is that what we're seeing here? Is that as they understand more and more of the shale play and the technology, depending on whether it's location, because I understand everyone is different, but as the technology advances, you're going to see more of these refracs happen because that's kind of the longevity of the play. Am I kind of reading these tea leaves right?
Those are interesting comments, and I think you hit the nail on the head. Certainly, the percentages you threw out kind of ring a bell in terms of accuracy. I won't comment on them so much as I will just the general philosophy is, again, we're through fracking technology, we're seeing better and better results on newly completed wells, and we've recognized that we can go back to these older wells, apply those same learnings to refracs, and certainly increase the reserves that we draw out of these older wells. And the real interesting thing about the refracs is it's a very general term. What we're finding now is there are many ways to rework these wells that sort of fall into that general category, and it's starting to feel like all these subcategories are catching a lot of interest and yielding more and more opportunity under the general umbrella of refrac.
So we're talking about refrac. Do you have an easy way or a very layman's way to describe the difference between a regular frac and a refrac? Because my understanding is that a lot of the same materials are used, aren't they?
That's correct. So a frac is short for hydraulic fracture stimulation treatment. And the technology itself is not new. It's 70 years old. But the goal, and I think I mentioned this the other day, is basically to create a highly conductive path between the formation and the wellbore, and that allows us to accelerate and enhance the recovery. And how we do it, I'll boil it down. We pump water, sand, and a cocktail of very safe chemicals at a high rate, and we do that in the excess of the ability for fluid to leak off into the formation. So we pump it faster than it can leak off. And what happens is that allows us to split the rock open, and then we wedge it open with all that sand that we're pumping. Now, that's a frac. A refrac is very much the same way. We're pumping into a well that's already been fracked. It might have hundreds of fracs that we've already put on it, or it might only have tens of fracs. But really, we're coming back to these old wells that already have fracs in them. They have sand in them. Some of our refrac's going to go there, and it's going to serve the purpose of dressing up those old fracs. They might be sort of degraded or plugged off, and the refrac itself, the secondary portion of it that we pump, or even the bulk of it, we hope to divert into new portions of the formation along that lateral, and split open and frac new rock, new formation, and get new entry points into the reservoir that may be lightly depleted or not depleted at all. And that's where you get the incremental bump in reserves, is contacting those portions that were bypassed before, during the initial completion, because we were limited on technology. So that really drives at the success of the refrac, is diverting into new portions of the reservoir along that wellbore, not necessarily growing the fracs further than the original ones, but getting into new portions that were not originally touched by the original frac, if that makes sense.
Charles Olson, Whiting Petroleum, with us talking about refracs going on in the Bakken. And you mentioned that you guys are kind of either, and I wrote down science project, maintain efficient. Those are kind of the three ways I look at oil and gas when they do a new project like this. The science project, which is it's might be costing you guys money, and then maintain is right around that break even point, and then efficient is where you're actually starting to see some profit on it and chunking them out to some different wells and that sort of thing. A lot of times this is true with natural gas, obviously, with some of those remote natural gas things when it comes to science projects and everything else. With refracs, I guess I'm still learning some of this. Is there a science project phase where you gotta go in and lose some money, knowing that, you know, you'll get the maintain and then the profitability efficiency phase? Or is it the numbers get put into a supercomputer and they're efficient right out of the gate? Talk to me a little bit about, I guess, are you guys becoming efficient with these? You don't have to spill your books, obviously, but just kind of the overview of it.
Now, that's a great question, and again, I touch on this in the presentation, but back in 2014, Whiting started seeing some potential for refracs. Others were doing it, and we felt like it would be a responsible thing to do as an operator to start building a portfolio of refracs. And at the time, you know, we felt we had picked some very good candidates. We went out and refracked these wells, and we had slightly better than a 50% success rate. And, you know, frankly, it was difficult at the time for those economics to compete with what we were delivering with new wells. And we wanted to take some time to evaluate those results long term. Well, in 2016, we revisited it, but we did it in a much more structured manner. You'd mentioned a computer or some sort of black box. Well, we certainly invented a system. I wouldn't call it a computer necessarily. It was basically a five-step process to execute and evaluate forward-going fracs. We recognize, you know, operating 1,400 wells across the basin, that there's a tremendous opportunity. We owe it to ourselves and our investors to figure this out. So step one, of course, involved an extensive candidate selection phase where we did an initial screening. We looked at root cause, you know, behind some of the underperforming wells, and we did a candidate classification process, all under extensive candidate selection phase. And then, you know, we launched off into the design and engineering phase for wells that were chosen to go forward, step three in economic analysis. And then four, of course, was the job execution, and five, plowing those results back into our model and learning from them. So we've done four more over the course of the last year and a half. That doesn't seem like a lot, but again, going back to our measured approach, we had an initial model We wanted to do a handful of them. All four of them represent different styles of refracts, by the way, and different opportunities. And we're currently pleased with the initial results. We're in that feedback and iteration loop, hoping to leverage those learnings into 2018 and perform a second round of refracts with those learnings and choose, good candidates and execute according to what we learned on our previous refracts. So that's kind of our process. We feel like it's simple but elegant and so far been successful.
What were some of the barriers to entry that you saw in that? And a couple off the top of my head, I'm thinking, price of oil, and I'm thinking just plain out geography and, work crews and that sort of thing. I really like how you guys just took a step back. And in fact, I'm doing some personal speaking on the side, and we're kind of going through a theme called reverse, which is a different way to just take a step back. Sometimes you got to do that, and then you'll end up moving forward. And that, to me, sounds like what you guys did. You just took a step back and came up with a process, and then now you guys knew how to move forward. Were there some barriers to entry there, whether it be, like I say, the work crews at different locations or price or geography? Or was it just that, we needed to develop the system, and now that we got the system, we can move ahead?
Now, another great question. So the barriers, there are several. Of course, we're a publicly traded company, and we always owe it to our company and investors to spend our money as wisely as possible. So when we came up with refrac candidates, they need to compete economically with the other projects in our portfolios. So step one is coming up with a confidence level that, yes, these refracs will yield superior economics, and we should proceed forward with our very best candidates. Another barrier, of course, is we're working on older wells, and they might not be that old. They might be 4, 5, 6 years old, but whenever you do that, wellbore integrity is paramount. And whenever you're working on a new well, you're a little spoiled because everything's brand new, and you can have a much higher confidence level in the materials and the strengths of the materials that you're dealing with. So when you work on these older wells, you really need to be cautious and test everything and test them twice to make sure that it's all going to hold. It's all going to protect the people and in the environment. So that's another barrier, just making sure that we've dotted all our I's and crossed our T's when it comes to that. And then you talked about crews as being a barrier. Whiting has created a very efficient machine when it comes to drilling and completing wells. We plan months and months in advance in our drilling and completions efforts so that we have minimal downtime. And it's interesting, these refracs are just different enough operationally and their duration to where it's a little bit difficult to fold projects like that into your planning, because the work that happens prior to a refrac can be a little unpredictable in terms of the timeline. So that's been one interesting barrier that I don't think has been was completely foreseen that we've experienced. So having a dedicated frac crew is probably a smart idea, and something that we're definitely going to look at, going forward as we assemble enough of these to go from refrac to refrac to refrac. So those are a couple of the barriers. You'd mentioned geography, certainly going back to these older locations. Over time, it's our responsibility to the state of North Dakota, the government, landowners, to shrink these pads back, even while they're producing, from the space that was originally needed to drill and complete them. So a lot of them have been shrunk back, reseeded, recontoured. And of course, when you go back to refract, you need some of that space back. So coming up with ways to place equipment so that you don't need to redisturb things is another interesting barrier that has come about. And then, of course, re-engineering the facilities to handle the bump in production and getting those prepared for higher production out of those wells. And then You know, there have been a whole host of new regulations that have come into play that are refrac triggers, you know, the things we have to pay attention to there. So the barriers are certainly not insurmountable, but they're things that we need to keep track of and plan for in our business as we move through our refrac process here.
Any final thoughts? Charles Olson, Whiting Petroleum, appreciate the time today talking about refracs. I just like to make sure guests have the final word, and if they care to say anything at all or reiterate anything or in case we missed a point. So the floor is yours.
Sure. Thank you again. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. I guess I'll leave you with the note that, you know, the Bakken is an unusual play, and some people consider it a mature asset at this point. I tend to disagree with that notion. I think, you know, I agree with the folks that think it's going to be a play for decades to come, and refracs are just one step along the path to, you know, getting more out of the Bakken, putting more back into the Bakken. And I think it's one step of many that we'll see along the way.
And that was Charles Olson, completion specialist with Whiting Petroleum. To listen to this podcast or other podcasts, visit our website, thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com. And while you're there, be sure to sign up for our weekly Crude Life newsletter. We're also on social media. Check out our Facebook and Twitter pages. Those links, of course, are available at thecrudelife.com. Once again, I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsors. And if I could ask you folks for a favor to go to our website, click on the sponsors page, take a look at who's there. There might be somebody you know. There might be somebody that you might want to do business with. So feel free to reach out to them and thank them for supporting this program. They keep interviews like this free, which helps people plan for their lives and plan for their time and also make a little money. Over the past few months, I've told you about how unbelievable Hatch coaching is. Don't just take my word for it. Listen to what Christy Huber, president of the United Way of Cass Clay, says about Hatch coaching.
When you get to know Eric, and he is so willing to share with you how growing up, you know, his life was impacted by an outstanding mom and the challenges that he may be faced, when he's willing to open up and talk about those things, you're immediately drawn in. And that's that vulnerability that I think that he has publicly said, it's okay to be yourself. And it's okay for you to make mistakes along the way.
To find out more about Hatch Coaching or to have Eric Hatch speak at your event or company, visit hatchcoaching.com. That's hatchcoaching.com. Or call 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572.
Since 1979, MBI Energy Services has committed to responsibly growing with today's oil and gas industry by providing proven experience, strategic locations, and integrated services. MBI Energy Services is well established, and its innovation in safety and excellent customer service is what truly makes MBI Energy Services the oil field service professionals. MBI Energy Services, the cutting edge in oil field safety solutions. Learn more at MBIEnergyServices.com.
That's it for this episode. My name is Jason Spies. Till next time, be happy, and remember, sometimes life can just be crude. We'll see you next time, folks.
There's a cold draft laying low to the floor. Blankets on the couch trying to keep me warm. Well, that's just part of living here. Snow's following, starting to blow. Season's drifting up by my front door. Well, life slows down at a few below. You're walking out.
The music on today's program is written and performed by the Moody River Band. To find out more about the Moody River Band or their music, visit our website, thecrudelife.com, and click on the Musician tab. That's thecrudelife.com, and click on the Musicians tab.
Subscriber shining with the mocking sound. A frozen cobblestone reflects the night. Brightening up the smiling face with all the people passing by. It's the Broadway shining with the marquee sign. Frozen cobblestone reflects the night. Small city, it's a big time life. And I'm walking, I'm talking, I'm smoking, I'm choking with the people that I know. And I'm thinking, I'm drinking, I'm spinning, I'm grinning. Hope my car stops when I go. Car's dead, the engine's froze. I feel the wind chill down to my toes. Well, I'm glad I don't live too far away. Oh, well, the moonlight shining on my walk home. I'm breathing in cold, they're exhaling smoke. So quiet, I can hear it all. And I'm walking out. Hope my car starts when I go.